Wars of Doctor Who. Star Wars of Doctor Who. Star Wars of Doctor Who.
His name is Rob.
His name is Rob.
He knows his Wookiees from his Daleks. Listen now.
Listen now.
Hear the Force challenge the TARDIS. Get your blue milk and jelly babies while we see which drives you crazy. Star Wars or Doctor Who.
Hey everyone, and welcome to Who Wars Episode 8. This is the podcast for those among us who just can't decide between Star Wars and Doctor Who. Everyone, this is Grassroots Podcasting. We had a lot of new followers this week on Twitter, so if this is your first time listening to the show or the first of the new episodes you've heard, I do want to iterate, this is Grassroots Podcasting. We want to hear from everyone, whoever you are. So whether it's show feedback or a question, or if you want to submit something to the show and reach a lot of listeners every episode, you know, get in touch. If you've got an idea for a regular or even semi-regular slot on the show, I'd love to hear it, because that's what Grassroots Podcasting is all about. Anyway, how was your week? I listened to some great podcasts this past week, too many to mention here, but I think I'll do a shout out to a couple of them, and maybe I'll make this a bit of a thing in future episodes. I'll call out the podcasts I've been listening to. First up, 42 to Doomsday. For the Doctor Who fans out there, this is an Australian podcast. Two blokes talking about Doctor Who. Even though they say they don't want to talk about Series 8, they end up talking a bit about Series 8 in their most recent episode. But the majority of the episode, I have to say, is them talking about the Hartnell era. And that's really quite interesting to listen to. So if you like Doctor Who, particularly the older stuff, 42 to Doomsday might just be your cup of tea. The second one I'll shout out is for the Star Wars fans, I'll keep it balanced, and that's Star Wars Action News. Now, as the name might give away, this is for people who like collecting action figures in particular, and other Star Wars collectibles, and it's a really entertaining show. It's done by Arnie and Marjorie. They're a couple who have done this for a long, long time. They know an awful lot about collectibles. And in this last episode, they had people sending in MP3s of their Holy Grail items. And gosh, there are some interesting Holy Grail items out there amongst Star Wars collectors. Some of them I wouldn't mind having myself. So another great episode from Star Wars Action News. For both these podcasts, I'll chuck some links into the show notes if you want to look them up and see what they're all about. I'm really looking forward to the next Star Wars Rebels episode. It comes out on US TV tomorrow, Monday, and in Australia later in the week. So we'll have a review of it in next Sunday's episode of Who Wars. It's called Fighter Flight, and I've got a little blurb about it, which runs, after being annoying to each other, Hera sends Ezra and Zeb on an errand to gather supplies, but they pull a crazy stunt and steal a TIE fighter instead. When the Empire destroys the home of a farmer who used to be friends with Ezra's parents, they imprison him and are en route to a labor camp. The TIE fighter proves useful when Ezra and Zeb have to work together to rescue the innocent farmer and his wife. So that sounds like a fun episode. Zeb and Ezra, the relationship between those two is very interesting, and I think having them work together like this will be very fun. Something else that really stands out there is that this farming couple that they rescue were friends of Ezra's parents. Now, we haven't heard a lot about Ezra's parents to date, so I'm wondering if this episode might be a little bit of background on Ezra and his parents, in the same way that we got a little bit of background on Zeb in the previous episode, Droids in Distress. We'll just have to wait and see. Moving on to Doctor Who, reactions to this current series of Doctor Who, Series 8, are still mixed at the moment on social media. It's quite interesting, you know, because I think, personally, being as objective as I can, I'm not afraid to call a spade when it comes down to it. I think this is a much better series than at least Series 7, and better than, large chunks of Series 5 and 6 as well, because, you know, a lot of people out there are laying the blame on Stephen Moffat, but I don't think he's the problem. I think he's doing quite well this series. So, interesting stuff. I really do think it comes down to this being a brand new Doctor. When we look back on the Matt Smith Doctor, when he began, he was in a much worse place than Capaldi is now, in terms of people saying, oh, who's this young guy? Oh my God, look at his chin. You know, people commenting on the shape of his body, or his youth, or whatever it might be, and he had a really hard time of it. But, you know, everywhere you look now in fandom, cute girls are wearing fezzes, thin young boys wearing tweed coats at conventions. You know, Matt Smith is beloved. I can hardly find anyone who will say a bad word about him these days. Maybe they'll say a few bad words about some of the stories he was in, but Matt Smith himself, lots of love out there for him. And it's really hard to believe there was a time, as I said, when more negative attitudes towards Matt Smith were quite normal. But he won over the fans during his era, and it just goes to show that anything is possible with Doctor Who if you just give the new Doctor a chance. And in saying that, I think a lot of people are giving the new Doctor a chance in terms of liking Capaldi. You know, there are the odd comments about how he's too old. These are often, you know, I don't want to generalise, but they're often from younger fans who have come to Doctor Who because they thought the leads, either David Tennant or Matt Smith, were cute, and now it's suddenly someone not cute. It's an old man. You know, to them it's almost a grandfather. I get that, but I would like to think those fans, or at least some of those fans, will come to realise, hey, Doctor Who is not just doctors who are boyfriend material, and is actually a show about an interesting guy who gets around in time and does all sorts of cool stuff. And all those things we say about the Doctor, how he's never cowardly, never cruel, all of that stuff. And hopefully some of them will stick around and enjoy what is possibly one of the greatest concepts ever seen in a TV series. And I don't say that lightly, but just a lot of the mechanisms that are built into Doctor Who, starting with the fact he can regenerate, starting with the fact he can be a different man every 3 or 4 or 5 years or whatever the case might be, is fascinating. And the rotating cast of companions, fascinating. The fact he can go anywhere in time and space, not just on Earth, but in the galaxy. It's wonderful, beautiful, crazy sci-fi fantasy, and for people to get uptight because they've been in love with the leads for the last couple of Doctors, and now there's someone there who they can't fall in love with, I think really misses the point of what Doctor Who is all about. So maybe the show will bleed off a few fans. I guess they weren't watching for the right reasons in the first place, so maybe easy come, easy go. But to wind this segment of the intro up, I think it's the case that we might just have to have another series or two of Capaldi before people get the feeling, oh, this is what the Doctor's like. Oh, it's okay to like a Doctor like this. Oh, Doctors are sometimes different to each other, because truth be told, the Matt Smith and David Tennant Doctors were more similar than different. Even though they had differences, they were more similar than different. And I think it's just a good thing for the show to have been shaken up like this. And yes, I'm sure Stephen Moffat will leave. He could leave this Christmas. You know, I don't think they'd announce it now during the current series, but possibly between this series and the Christmas special, it might be announced that he's off. And if he does stay, I'd be very surprised if season 9 wasn't his last. You know, he's had a good run at it. He does have other projects like Sherlock, other things he'd like to do. Obviously, he's a mega fan of the series and would like to give it a red-hot go. But again, as I say, it could be this Christmas, or it could be 12 months from now. Either way, people will be seeing more of Capaldi, getting more used to him. They'll have a new showrunner in time. Doctor Who will evolve yet again. And people who started with it in 2005 or later might just be starting to get the feel that us older Whovians have, that the show is all about change. You can watch it over 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years, and you'll see a lot of different eras. If a story or a series is not to your liking, that's okay. It'll probably change very soon. You know, it's like the seasons. Different styles, different attitudes, different everything. It comes and goes with Who, so you know, for all those out there who are upset with what they see as the Moffat era and blame everything on Moffat, or if they don't like Capaldi, I think those people would be in the minority, though. Or they just have some sort of unspecified feeling that the show's not for them at the moment. Just sit it out. Your feelings might change. The show will change. And who knows where we'll be in 5 years' time. Alrighty then, that wraps it up for my intro to the show this week. I think we've got a lot of good news stories to get to, a lot of great features to get to. I'm so excited with some of the content we're bringing you in this episode. I just can't tell you. So I'll get out of your hair now, but I'll be back in a moment with the stories of the week. All I want to end with is, if you're on iTunes out there, I would love a rating and review from you. The review can be as simple as just one sentence. ratings and reviews. Help us on iTunes. Help us reach other people, people just like you. So if you want to help me personally, if you want to help other fans like yourself, remember, this is grassroots podcasting. We are trying to get out there to as many people as possible. Please jump on iTunes. Take 30 seconds and do that for us. It would be greatly, greatly appreciated. Alrighty, on to my stories of the week. Alrighty then, moving into my top stories of the week, the stories I've carefully sifted through during the week, filtered, as it were, and I've come up with four little gems that I think you might enjoy out there. It's not meant to be a comprehensive news coverage, just stuff I found particularly interesting. And as always, we'll kick off with episode 7 news. Not a spoiler this week, so if you're scared of spoilers, don't worry. This isn't a spoiler. Well, I guess there are some people out there who might consider hearing about an actor joining the cast as a spoiler, but I think most of you won't mind hearing that Warwick Davis is joining the Episode 7 cast. Now, we don't know who or what Warwick is going to play. We do know that the movie has a lot of practical effects and props and puppets and all sorts of real stuff, if I can put it that way, that the prequels lacked. So maybe Warwick will be in a droid, maybe Warwick will be in some kind of latex outfit, maybe he'll just be playing a little person in the film. Who knows? But Warwick is definitely in it, and interestingly, StarWars.com celebrated this, announced this, however you might like to put it, with a short video, and it's quite a well-produced little video. It's not just someone's stuck up a camera phone in front of Warwick and had him say, oh yeah, I'm in episode 7. It's actually a little produced piece. So I thought it might be fun to have a listen to part of it. Let's have a listen to it now.
What? Hello, Warwick Davis.
Hello.
Hello, Warwick Davis.
Yes?
JJ! Hi.
Yeah?
Would I like to appear in Star Wars Episode 7? Let me think about it. Yes!
And I think that might be the reaction most of us would have if JJ was on the phone asking us if we'd like to be in Star Wars Episode 7. It's a very funny little video. There's a bit more to it too, with a very special guest in it as well. I won't spoil it if you haven't seen it. And you can go and take a look at that online. The link is in the show notes. Moving on to Star Wars Rebels news, I guess the big news this week, well, we kind of knew that Darth Vader was going to be in an episode of Rebels, but this week we finally saw an image of Darth Vader in Rebels, and we could see that they've gone for a highly stylized kind of mask for Vader. It's still clearly Vader, but just everything in Rebels has a slightly tweaked kind of feel to it. And it was very interesting to see how Vader is portrayed. We only see him, well, so far in these pics, as a hologram. So you can't get the full effect, the full Monty. But just like Obi-Wan Kenobi appeared as a hologram in the opening movie that kicked off Star Wars Rebels, Spark of Rebellion, here we see Vader in a hologram as well. But, you know, that wasn't the only cool Star Wars Rebels stuff this week. StarWars.com dropped four new videos relating to the franchise, and they're all really, really good. The first one I looked at is a Freddie Prinze Jr. interview. Yes, my mate Freddie Prinze Jr., the guy who chats to me on Twitter all the time. You'll have to have heard an earlier episode to get that reference. He has some things to say. Here's the start of his interview, just where he introduces himself and what he thinks of Kanan.
Hi, I'm Freddie Prinze Jr., and I'm the voice of Kanan on Star Wars Rebels. Kanan is pretty much the coolest guy in the universe.
So he thinks he's pretty much the coolest guy in the universe. I think Han Solo might have something to say about that, just saying. But it's a great interview. I only wanted to play a little snippet there, so go to StarWars.com. Or go to the YouTube channel for Star Wars. I'll throw a link into the show notes anyway, and you'll be able to see the full interview with Freddie. After that, the second video I looked at is a very, very interesting video of Kanan and Ezra fighting with the Inquisitor. So this must be coming up in an episode pretty soon, I'd imagine. and the Inquisitor is quite a formidable opponent. You see Ezra shooting his little slingshot at him while he's dueling with Kanan. And one thing I did notice in this video clip is the way the lightsabers are portrayed. Have a close look at them. You'll see they're a lot thinner to a traditional lightsaber, and if you look very, very close, you almost get the sense the light is rotating, and this is very, very deliberate. In the first Star Wars film, in A New Hope, the lightsaber effect was made by these tubes with a rotating kind of light inside some kind of film that they could then light up with post-production effects, I guess, and make look realistic. Well, that's what they've done for Rebels. Because it's set 5 years before A New Hope, they've gone for that look. You know, in later Star Wars movies, in Episode 5 and 6, they had tweaked the effect a little more and it didn't look like this anymore. So it's kind of curious that in Rebels we have these thinner lightsabers that have this rotating lightsaber effect. But perhaps I'm talking too much. You want to hear, I guess, Kanan and Ezra fighting with the Inquisitor. So here it is.
The temple records are quite complete. In close quarter fighting, Bilava's emphasis was always on form three, which you favor to a ridiculous degree.
All right then, so Kanan has taken form three to a ridiculous degree. I was kind of wondering whether the different forms of lightsaber combat would carry over into Rebels, because I know a lot of EU people were thinking that as well, because the lightsaber forms were part of the old EU material. Obviously, it's now Legends, and only bits and pieces of it will be cherry-picked for Rebels and for future Star Wars projects. So here we have the Inquisitor referring to Form 3, and so yes, there is something that's been cherry-picked from the EU. So EU fans, have faith. Things that you've known and loved in the past may end up in Rebels, may end up in Star Wars Episode 7 and beyond. It's entirely possible. There is a good example of it. Moving on from that, we have a video featuring Hera and Sabine investigating a very, very spooky location. I might let the video speak for itself here.
Whoever did this must have been pretty eager to get what was inside.
Too eager to just flip the latch and open them? Who would... We're not dealing with a who. More like a what.
That's comforting. You don't happen to know why this base was abandoned?
I'm starting to have my suspicions.
Wow, so what do we make of that? Hera and Sabine sneaking around in a very spooky field of proceedings. I think something nasty might be about to jump out of the darkness there. I'm very curious to see that episode. Rounding it out, Dave Filoni, all praise Dave Filoni. he talks in this video about growing up with the classic era and how they've gone back to their roots and direct sources and looking for authenticity. That bit I was talking about earlier about the lightsaber does get a mention in this video, but the clip I'll pull out here is just Dave talking for a moment.
We all grew up, a lot of us, the classic era, and here we were, after many years of Clone Wars working in the prequel era, going back to our Star Wars roots. We not only just looked at the films, we went and actually got to the people, got to the direct sources, and have involved them in our process. And so you can look for that type of authenticity in Rebels.
So yeah, everything I've been saying about Star Wars Rebels in past episodes kind of gets encapsulated there by Dave. Just this feeling that for people of a particular age, especially, you know, I sit here as a 39-year-old, for people who are, you know, between 40 and 50, say, I think there's going to be a real love for Rebels. So that doesn't mean if you're younger, you can't love it. But for people like us who grew up with the original trilogy and were a particular age at a particular time, you know, I'm basically the same age as Freddie Prinze Jr., so when I hear him talk about the series, not just Dave Filoni, I can relate to a lot of things he says as well, because the things he grew up with and the cartoons he watched on Saturday mornings and the films he saw at a certain age growing up, not just Star Wars, but all of it, is my experience as well. So I get it. I totally get where these guys are coming from, and it's why, as I've said before, Star Wars Rebels resonates with me in a way that Clone Wars just never did. I'll be going back and giving Clone Wars a go at the end of the year. I've said that in many episodes now. But straight off the bat, when you look at, you know, the first couple of episodes of Rebels versus the first couple of episodes of Clone Wars, it's chalk and cheese for me. I just can't relate to Clone Wars in the way that Rebels just feels like putting, you know, on a pair of slippers or pulling a warm blanket over me or something. It's very hard to describe, but I think people of my vintage will get exactly what I mean. I hope you do anyway. Please write in and let me know so I know that I'm not going crazy. All right, moving on. There's a channel on YouTube called Retroblasting that I have been into for the longest time. It's got a really great Facebook presence as well, and I'll toss up links to both the YouTube and Facebook in the show notes so you can go there. Why do I like it? Well, I was just talking a moment ago about my love for Star Wars and the original trilogy and being a certain age, you know, particularly talking about the 80s when I talk about that kind of stuff. And Retroblasting looks at great TV and film and toys, particularly from the 80s, you know, but does delve back into the 70s a bit, and I think moves forward a bit into the 90s as well. But if you think of the 80s as Retroblasting's sweet spot, jump on their YouTube channel and start watching videos. There's a lot of Star Wars content, but there's also other things like Masters of the Universe and Mask. And some of the videos are funny, and some of them are informative, and some of them are actually little lectures, I guess you could call them, that the two hosts, Michael and Melinda, have given at different conventions around the US, and they're really interesting. But here I want to highlight, just recently, Retroblasting has restored, or is in the process of restoring, a vintage X-Wing toy. This is the 1978 X-Wing toy, and well, I won't describe it anymore. I'll let Michael French explain it on the video.
Our latest Retroblasting restoration comes to us from Matt Weber, who sent us his childhood X-Wing fighter. This is one of the original Kenner X-Wing fighters from 1978, which means it's all white plastic. The original X-Wings were cast in all white plastic. So as you can imagine, they're difficult for collectors to preserve if they're not mint in the box, because white plastic tends to yellow.
From having watched past Retroblasting episodes, I know Michael has a particular fondness for helping people when they come to him with their original childhood toys, not just something they picked up at the flea market and want to restore, but something they had back in the 80s and just loved to death, literally in some cases. And he loves to, you know, clean them up and put new decals and stickers on them and find, you know, new parts for parts that are broken or missing. And this video, this is part one. There's already a part two up as well. And this video will show what he does to this guy's X-Wing and also give you ideas about what you can do with an X-Wing. I mean, speaking of flea markets, I have a pretty ratty X-Wing that I certainly did not own in 1978 when I was 3 years old. It's one I've bought in more recent years. It's in not great condition, and I'll be restoring it, and I'll certainly be using Michael's video to look at that X-Wing and to give me ideas on what to do with it. Here's a little more from the video.
We've completed the cleaning of the parts on Matt's X-Wing, and unfortunately, unlike Juan's Snowspeeder, where yellowing was due largely to grime and it went away, the X-Wing here is yellow due to discoloration from being stored in a non-climate-controlled environment, possibly, and just time and wear. But we have a large number of pieces that are salvageable, and I think this will be a really nice, nostalgic, and functional piece when we get done with it. So we're going to continue with the restoration.
So yeah, if you're interested in this kind of thing, if you're interested in, you know, retro type TV, movies and toys, do check out Retroblasting in general. But if you're out there with a particular fondness for Star Wars toys and restoring Star Wars toys, do take a look. Not only is this X-Wing restoration up, but in the past Michael has done the big Millennium Falcon toy that kids had back in the day, and I think there's a Snowspeeder video from memory. All sorts of cool stuff. I can't say enough nice things about Michael and Melinda at Retroblasting. And if you've never heard of them, but you think this is your cup of tea, please go over there. Please give them some more hits on their video. Jump on their Facebook, write to them, tell them what you think, because I'm sure they'd be very appreciative of that, just as I'm appreciative when you guys get in touch with me. Okay, and my final piece for the week is that the BBC put out a little promotional video for the Doctor Who episode this week, Flatline. I'll be talking about Flatline in much more detail later in the show, so I won't say too much here. Maybe I'll just hit play on the video and then I'll come back in a moment.
This is a story pitched by Jamie Matheson as his very first attempt at pitching a Doctor Who story. And he brought it to me in the form of a drawing. And I looked at the drawing and then I looked again at the drawing and I saw it very differently. You're about to see why.
The Doctor drops off Clara in the wrong place and the wrong time. And they realise something very strange is going on.
Flatline is an extraordinary episode. It has a monster the like of which we've never seen before and has a relationship with dimensional functions.
There's been lots of people missing, disappearing. There's all this graffiti and paintings popping up.
It will take us to a place that is all around us, but is completely different.
Okay, so some interesting information there. If you're not sure who the speakers were, they were Stephen Moffat, the showrunner of Doctor Who, Jenna Coleman, who plays Clara, and of course Peter Capaldi, who plays the Doctor. It's interesting that the writer, Jamie Matheson, first came to Stephen Moffat with a drawing. You know, we've got a sense of what this episode is about, and I'm trying not to say too much. It's interesting that he pitched it initially with a drawing. I hope he had some words with it as well. Otherwise, pitching Doctor Who has become very, very easy. I might draw something as well and send it to Stephen Moffat to see what he thinks. But just kidding. Jamie Matheson, of course, wrote the previous episode of Doctor Who, Mummy on the Orient Express. But as you would have learned from one of our show previews a few episodes back, that was the second thing he wrote for Doctor Who. He wrote Flatline first, and then Stephen Moffat thought, gee, you're, you know, a pretty dab hand at this. Why don't you write something about the Orient Express in space with a mummy on board? Go for it. So what we saw last week was actually Jamie's second story, and it was a damn good one. And if he can do that with someone else's idea, the smart money is he can do so much more with his own idea, but you'll have to wait until later in the show to hear more about that. I did enjoy Jenna's comments as well, but it was Peter's comments that really brought it home. He's quite right in saying it's an extraordinary episode with a monster we've never seen before, but I won't say any more about that. All right, that wraps up my top stories of the week. What did you think of those? If you have any questions or comments, please reach me at the usual addresses, and I'd love to hear from you. Earlier today, listeners, I had the great pleasure of speaking to the professional comic book artist Eric J. Now, Eric J is someone I followed, you know, as a fan of his work for over a decade at this point in time, and he and I have been friends online for basically that whole period as well. However, we had never actually spoken. So with me now having this Star Wars and Doctor Who podcast, it occurred to me that Eric has actually been a comic artist for Doctor Who in the past, back when IDW had the license. Eric put together a David Tennant story there in terms of the artwork. And so I thought, well, look, I'll get Eric on the show and we'll talk about that and we'll talk about comics in general and maybe we'll do a nice hour or so. I can put a little preview on the Sunday show and then do the whole full interview on the Wednesday or something like that, you know, something midweek like I've done in the past with our special episodes. Well, boy, was I wrong. Eric and I got chatting, and by the time we'd finished, we'd been chatting for over 3 hours. Yes, he was sitting there in his Saturday afternoon in San Diego in the nice sunshine, sitting outside, chatting away. I was here in my little studio Sunday morning here in Sydney through till about lunchtime, and we just talked and talked and talked and talked. So roughly the 3 and a bit hours translated to a large section on the comics industry and drawing and all sorts of stuff relating to that that has nothing to do with Doctor Who and nothing to do with Star Wars. Stuff that I think a lot of geeks out there who like comics and drawing and the creative process might be very interested in hearing. So I've taken that audio and put that aside. Then there was a big discussion on Star Wars, and then there was a big discussion on Doctor Who. So I think because this episode of Who Wars is a bit Star Wars light, I might pillage some of that Star Wars conversation and play that for you now. To hear the rest of the Star Wars conversation, tune in on Tuesday night, and you'll hear the full audio of myself and Eric talking about Star Wars. And then on Thursday night, I'll do the same for our conversation about Doctor Who. Then, of course, you'll have next Sunday's episode, and then the following Wednesday, once everyone's gotten used to me chatting with Eric about Star Wars and Doctor Who, I'll run the piece on the comic book industry and drawing and the creative process and all that kind of stuff, so people can hear that as well. I think that probably runs as long as the Star Wars and Doctor Who sections put together. I could be wrong once I've done some editing, but that should be a fairly long affair in and of itself. So, loads of content of myself and Eric J chatting. I'll get out of your hair now and let you have a taste of our conversation about Star Wars. Again, there'll be more of this on Tuesday, and then a similar Doctor Who conversation on Thursday, and then the following Wednesday, talk about the comic industry. So without any further ado, here's myself and Eric. Do you have a favorite scene in the saga?
You know, almost Empire is far and away my favorite of the first three. And I'd have to say there are two from that movie that I love. There's the first, you know, the one where they find out that Lando's betrayed him. That's just, to me, I don't know, that's just a great scene. And then obviously, you know, the final, you know, Luke, I am your father.
Yeah.
No! He's like there and he's got his hand cut off and everything like that. That was just, I don't know. That was just a great scene. So well, yeah, this is probably my favorites right there.
We're talking of changed scenes and you've just reminded me of one change I did hate. And that was in the original when Vader says, join me, Luke just looks at him and just drops off that gangplank and just falls down silently, you know, to what he presumes will be his death. You know, he has no way of knowing he's going to be saved. He thinks he's going to die, and he does it silently. And then in the remake, or in the special edition, we have, whoa, as he falls down. It's like, no, you've ruined the whole scene. That's not what it was about.
Yes, yes, you're absolutely right. Oh my God, I didn't even remember that. Wow.
You'd purged it from your memory because it was so horrible.
Yeah, yeah. Oh my God. You're right. Yeah, you're right.
Alrighty.
There are so many things. There are so many things that George Lucas, as a young filmmaker, forgot once he became a mature filmmaker, you know? And it's one of those things. It's interesting to me, you know what I mean? And as a creator, you know, you need to be mindful of, you know what I mean? Like, because that you're exactly right. That scene has a very distinct meaning when he just drops silently to his death, you know, presumed death, you know? And it speaks to a nobility, you know, and a strength and a resolve, you know what I mean? That the character has.
Yeah.
It's completely undercut by the screen, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's a massive FU to Vader. Like, mm-hmm. I'm not joining you. Goodbye. You know, and just silently dropping off.
And it's hugely powerful.
Yeah, massively.
And it's the exact same problem that most people have, you know, I'd say the vast majority of Star Wars fans have with the you know, Han shot first thing, you know? It's Han shot first because he's a badass, man.
Yeah. He's not going to let this guy have a shot at him.
No. And he's a bit of a scoundrel, you know what I mean? Like, he's supposed to be a bit of a scoundrel.
Yeah.
That's the deal, you know what I mean? Like, yes, he's like, you know, he's got an inherent goodness to him, but that doesn't make him not a bit of a scoundrel, you know?
The way he gets up and flicks the coin to the bartender and says, sorry about the mess. He's got no intention of hanging around to help the police with their investigations. He's out of there. He's shot a dude. Absolutely. He's done.
He knew exactly what he needed to do to survive, and he's doing it. And he's in no rush.
Exactly. Exactly. All right, final Star Wars question. Rate your level of excitement if Marvel was to come calling. I mean, it's got four series in 2015. There's Star Wars, there's Darth Vader, there's Princess Leia, and they've got one based on Kanan, the Jedi character from Rebels. If they came calling in the future and said, you know, do a one-shot for us or a few issues, I mean, would you be excited to actually draw Star Wars professionally?
Oh, yeah. I mean, how could you not be? You know what I mean? Like, it's the same thing with, you know, look, I only did one issue, you know, like a one shot of Doctor Who, but that doesn't, and it's a, you know, comic, and you know, whatever you want to, whatever importance you put on the comics, you know what I mean, as a Who fan. But the fact that I was able to do something that is, you know, a part of Doctor Who, that's huge to me, you know what I mean? Like, my name is on there, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And that's incredible, you know what I mean? So yeah, if I got a chance to do some Star Wars, I'm like, God, you know, yeah. And you know what's really interesting?
Yes.
As I've condemned J.J. Abrams for not being a Star Trek fan but doing Star Trek.
Yes.
I would actually, I'm gonna parrot J.J.'s answer when he originally started doing Star Trek and was asked if he'd do Star Wars if he was asked to. Which is to say, I don't know that I'd actually want to do Star Trek comic books because I'm such a huge fan of Star Trek.
Right, yeah.
However, doing Star Wars comics, because I'm less of a fan of Star Wars than I am of Star Trek, I would absolutely jump at the chance. I would love to. Yeah. Now, having said that, I am a fan of Star Wars, so
yeah,
my,
but you
I'm
have
not
a-
parroting the answer.
I was going to say, but you have that little bit more detachment, maybe.
Yeah. I'm not as slavish to it, which again does parrot JJ's answer those many years ago. But you know, yeah, I'd love to. I mean, that would be a fantastic thing to do. I mean, that would just be so much fun. Now I say that with like the caveat being that doing likenesses in a comic book is a tremendous undertaking. You know, it's you go in and okay, so take 22 pages of comic book, which is already just a huge amount of work, and then realize that you've got in Doctor Who, you've only got in the issue I did anyway, I only had one character that I had to draw, you know, looking like the actor that played him, you know, in sometimes several times in the same panel. Now you've got a, you know, then you go to a Star Wars where you've got potentially, you know, what, 5, 6, 7 characters that you have to draw looking like they look in the movies, you know?
Yeah.
That could turn an amazing thing into just a huge freaking chore. Quicker than you might think. I wouldn't balk at the challenge. You know what I mean? It would definitely be something I'd invite and I'd want to do and I'd enjoy doing. And you know, it's one of those things the theory being anyway that you get, you know, I'm not, I haven't made my living drawing likenesses. There are guys out there that do, you know what I mean? There are a lot of these guys out there that, their bread and butter is, you know, drawing Star Wars characters, for instance. And they can do them from memory, you know, with no reference. And that's just crazy to me. You know what I mean? But I think, you know, you get to the point, I think you would get to the point at some point where it would become second nature, you know what I mean? And it wouldn't be quite so much of a chore, you know what I mean? So
yeah,
I'd be excited about it. With that one caveat, you know what I mean? That drawing likenesses is not the most pleasant thing to do all the time, you know?
Well, you know, keeping all of that in mind, all of what you've just said, the four titles are Star Wars, where I guess you'd have Han, Luke, Leia, and the traditional team. Darth Vader, where I guess you'd have Darth Vader running around with a lot of Imperials and Stormtroopers.
Mm-hmm.
Princess Leia, where I guess she's getting around maybe doing diplomatic stuff or stuff for the Rebel Alliance on her own. Mm-hmm. And Kanan with this character you haven't seen because you haven't seen Rebels yet. Right. Which of those would be the most appealing to you?
Oh, wow, that's an interesting question.
Like, you talk about doing likenesses. The Star Wars book would have a lot of likenesses, but then the Darth Vader book, he has that very specific look that I imagine would be quite hard to draw.
Oh, it is, but at the same time, it's like, you know, how hard is it to get a Darth Vader mask?
Right, okay.
You know, and like, I mean, like, hell, you could have a, you know, like a little bust on your desk, you know what I mean? And then if you got to draw him in a certain angle, you know what I mean? You just hold the head up and see how it looks, you know what I mean? Or take a photo, you know. That actually, of all of them, is probably the easiest, you know what I mean? Like, because you've got the, you know, the overall costume, as complicated as it is, it's ultimately a lot of black, and it's not really that big a deal. You know what I mean?
Okay.
The mask becomes the hardest part, you know, and if you've got a physical prop there in your house, you know what I mean, that you can just kind of go to anytime you need it, you know what I mean? Mm. Then that's nice. I mean, you're not going to have a Mark Hamill just sitting in your... You know, you're not going to have Mark Hamill just sitting in your room like going, "Hey, man, scream for me."
Well, you know, he lives fairly close to you over there in the States. Maybe he could come around.
Sure. I'll just call his publicist and arrange to have him, like, you know, at my beck and call. No, but I mean, everything's doable, you know what I mean? The two easiest would be the Kanan, because, you know, if he's character that's based on, you know, the cartoon Rebels, he's not based on an actor's likeness, you know what I mean?
True, yeah.
So you can kind of have a little more free reign there. And then, like I said, Darth Vader, because, like, there are nice, easy workarounds for getting it, you know, spot on. But I gotta say, man, I mean, like, if you're gonna do a Star Wars book, you want to do Star Wars,
the flagship one.
Yeah, you know, I mean, ultimately that's the one you want to do, you know. So I'd have to say, pitfalls and headaches included, that's the one I'd want to do. Yeah.
Well, I would love to see you do it if you got the chance.
Oh yeah, that'd be a lot of fun. I mean, you know, drawing the ships and just all those iconic things, that would be amazing.
Oh, imagine the detail you could get into on the Millennium Falcon, you know, just knowing how you drew Paris. Imagine getting in on the Falcon, all those little pipes and, you know, lumps and bumps all over the Falcon.
Absolutely. And talk about a book that would take 3 months to draw.
Yeah.
No, you know what? I'm sure, you know, again, it's one of those things where, like, at the beginning it'd probably be slow going, but, you know, as you got into it, you get a few pages into it, and it'd be another thing. I mean, well, we're gonna get there, but yeah, this is all applicable to Who.
All right, then. Well, let's move on to the Doctor Who questions, because that was the end of the Star Wars questions, and I am conscious you've given me so much of your time. I'm so appreciative of it.
Oh, that's no problem, man. I'm having a great time.
Cool. Okay, so that was myself chatting with Eric J. This is me back in the studio now. Eric's long gone. If you enjoyed that conversation about Star Wars, the full conversation will be up on Tuesday night, Australian time. On Thursday night, I'll put up a similar conversation, except it's about Doctor Who. And then the following Wednesday, there'll be another conversation with Eric J, this time about drawing and getting into the comic industry and, you know, some of his anecdotes about his time as a professional comic book artist. So it's all well worth waiting for. I hope you enjoyed it. If you do have any feedback at this stage, do let me know by Twitter or email or by Facebook.
My name is Amelia Pond. Since I was a little girl, I've waited 12 years and 4 psychiatrists for a podcast. When I grew up, it finally came. Its name is Who Wars. It's from a galaxy far, far away. They want minds that are bigger on the inside, such as yours. So send something. I sent something, and I've been listening ever since.
Now then, the Doctor Who episode that screened this week, today actually, as I always point out in simulcast with the UK here in Australia, was Flatline. This was written by Jamie Matheson, who wrote the previous episode as well, Mummy on the Orient Express. And like Mummy on the Orient Express, I found this to be a really good, solid episode. Maybe not as good as some people online are making out it is, but certainly not an own goal, certainly not a bad episode by any stretch of the imagination. Basically, the premise of two-dimensional creatures coming into our universe and looking at us, trying to communicate, examining us, and even experimenting on us, I think was one of the lines, by sucking us down into the ground or into the walls so we become flat objects, is quite a scary thing. not something I think we've seen before in Who, so that was quite cool. Something we have seen before, though, in Who is a shrinking TARDIS. We saw it in Legopolis, and I found it quite interesting that after the Doctor and Clara land in the TARDIS at the start of the story, jump out and notice, oh, look, it's a smaller TARDIS, and I'm sure at home there are people, you know, chuckling, oh, look, there's a smaller TARDIS. And the Doctor throws out a line like, oh, it's never done that before, or something along those lines. I was sitting there thinking, well, yeah, it did, Doctor, it did in Legopolis, have you forgotten that? And I know I shouldn't plug this place, and I know it's a forum I shouldn't go to. I actually tossed this up on Gallifrey Base earlier on today, and I said, well, this did happen in Legopolis, and yes, I shouldn't have done it. Gallifrey Base being what it is, you get these deeply boring people who pop up and say, well, actually, in Legopolis, there was the interior of the TARDIS got smaller as well as the exterior. So no, it didn't get smaller in Legopolis. It was actually smaller on the outside and inside. Here it was just the outside. So no, you're wrong. And that's, in a nutshell, why you don't go to Gallifrey Base all that often. My point there, which is my point here in this podcast, is the exterior of the TARDIS has shrunk before. In fact, in that thread I tossed up on Gallifrey Base, there were a couple of sensible people, and a few of them even pointed out other times that the TARDIS has shrunk for different reasons, at least in its exterior form. So to those on Gallifrey Base who are trying to be pedantic about this, just go away. All right, moving on. The premise that Clara was the Doctor in this episode does get a bit played up. People say, oh, Clara was the Doctor, it's the Doctor Clara, you know, but, you know, really not quite as successful as the Doctor Donna. It was basically Clara running around while the Doctor gave her lots of ideas and told her what to do, essentially. So it wasn't quite as thrilling as it might sound when we hear that Clara was the Doctor in this episode. But it was interesting. I thought this might have made it a Doctor Light episode at first, but Capaldi was there standing in the TARDIS giving commands and directions for a lot of it. He was on location with Clara at the start, and he was on location with Clara at the end. So I guess it really wasn't too much of a Doctor Light episode in the end, even though I thought it might shape up that way. Overall, I found these 2D aliens, interesting, but a little uninvolving. I mean, we couldn't understand them, except in a couple of scenes where the TARDIS was translating this muffled kind of voice. And that's okay. I thought they got really interesting. I thought they actually got really scary when they became three-dimensional, particularly when they formed into a big hand and reached out and grabbed one of the local council workers or one of the guys working on the gang that was cleaning up the graffiti. I thought that was actually probably the scariest part in the episode. And indeed, when they all started to shamble along like three-dimensional zombies, but slightly out of phase maybe with our dimension, they looked very much like the Take On Me video by A-ha from the mid-80s, where the comic book comes to life and you have these scratchy looking shambling kind of, well, not shambling per se, but rough kind of figures coming into our third dimension from the pages of a comic book. It did remind me of that very much, and that was kind of cool. What else did I like about this episode? Well, the premise, and I'll say that when I started watching this episode and we started seeing people sucked into walls and, you know, they're appearing as images and such, I was thinking the premise might be that by the end of it, the Doctor will reverse all of this. And that didn't happen. And that's a good thing. These people who were killed by these aliens were killed. They're dead. They weren't brought back by some magical wave of the sonic screwdriver. I really appreciated that. It actually made the story scary that these monsters, these aliens, were actually killing people. I thought that was very, very good. And in a similar way, at the end of the story, one of the people who survives is, you know, the grossest person in the whole story, the one who's the most angry and the most vile to everyone else. He's one of the people who survives. Normally, in a sort of a cliche-ridden script, that person will get their comeuppance at some stage and some of the nice people will survive. And that didn't happen here. In fact, it even led to the Doctor pointing out that maybe, you know, some of the good people died and some others who maybe should have died didn't, which I thought was quite cool too. There was a big sort of Doctor speech about protecting the planet and all of that, and I am the Doctor, and it harked back to, you know, David Tennant in particular, but also Matt Smith went in for a bit of that action from time to time. I'm not sure how I felt about it. My wife really thought it was cheesy. I kind of get caught up in the moment sometimes as an older fan, you know, when the music swells and he says, you know, that they are monsters and he's there to fight the monsters and, you know, do what he does best and I am the doctor and all this kind of stuff. I thought that was, yeah, it's hard for me to say it was cheesy because I think it was kind of neat. So, overall, an interesting story, an interesting alien. The Doctor and Clara being split up was good. I did find it interesting that Clara's lies weren't quite as played up in this episode, but it was certainly there. The Doctor does know she's lying to him, and she was even lying towards the end of the story when Danny was on the phone, and he says, you know, it's Soldier Boy or whatever he is, you know, pick up. And she's like, no, it's not him. You know, or even just these simple things Clara lies about all the damn time. And the Doctor knows. And I think it really came to the fore when she was, you know, basically begging, demanding to be told that she'd done a good job in the Doctor's stead in this episode. And he's very reluctant to say it. And then finally he agreed that she'd been a good Doctor, but that goodness didn't come into it. The look he gives her, the way he delivers that, and her confusion at that line, it's all part of this ongoing thing in the last few episodes at least, but for a lot of the series, actually, of Clara, her hubris, something's got to give. And then the final scene, of course, with Missy looking down at Clara on her tablet. I think Missy must have the latest iPad or something like that. And she made a comment about selecting her, if I recall, which I thought was interesting. I still am really not clear who Missy is, even though I've done a whole feature on it in a past podcast. I still don't know who she is, and I don't know why she would have selected Clara or how she would have selected Clara. You know, if I go away and think about it, I might come up with something more, but at the moment, my mind is just blank, and maybe that's a good thing. Maybe it's going to be a good thing to be surprised when we finally get to these last couple of episodes of the series, and they are rushing up quickly. We've got, I think that might have been episode 9 we just watched, so we've got another episode, this preview we just looked at, where the gang's off in London, but London is covered in a jungle, and we had a girl running along in a red coat. I'm guessing that might be a play on Red Riding Hood, perhaps, because it looked like it was a wolf that was stalking her, but we'll have to wait and see what happens there. And then after that, I think we're into the final two-parter of the year, where I think a lot will be revealed and a lot will happen. There's always the Christmas episode, though, at the end of the year, although that's always a bit of a jolly knees-up, so you can't rely on that to be telling more of this ongoing story. I think we might get a lot of stuff wrapped up in the next 3 weeks or so. That's kind of exciting when you think about it, because those 3 weeks are going to come and go very, very quickly. Anyway, what did you think of it? Did you watch this episode? Did you have any strong thoughts on it? Did you think it was just a fantastic episode, like I see so many people saying? Did you think it was a bit of a dry episode that you weren't too into, because I have seen those comments as well. I'm somewhere in between. I think that was a good Doctor Who of the week. It's a 7 out of 10, maybe a 7.5 out of 10 for me. You know, if you twisted my arm, maybe I'd give it an 8. You know, I'm floating around that area. It was enjoyable, but not profound. And, yeah, write in, let me know, tweet me, drop me an MP3, whatever you like, and I'll put it on next week's show. Hopefully Lex will review this in next week's show as well, and I'm sure she'll have her own unique take on it too. Okay, moving on.
I've really enjoyed this past week. I've been bopping room to room, sidewalk to sidewalk, with Don't Stop Me Now stuck in my head for the entire week. So thanks, Doctor Who, for the music. And I also have to talk about Gus. Very exciting addition there. During the times when I didn't have the song stuck in my head, I was probably thinking about Gus and speculating some kind of theory. And no, I'm not going to share any with you, because some of them involved pickles. Don't ask. The voice of Gus was kind of like the computer voice from Jurassic Park. I was expecting it to say dinosaur, DNA, at any point. Were you? No? Jurassic Park's my favorite movie. Forgive me. This episode was beautiful. It should have been closer to Halloween, don't you think? 2 weeks too soon? This episode was about a mummy that was also a vampire. As far as Halloween-themed episodes go, that's pretty good. Also, the costumes of this episode were amazing. Claire's dress was gorgeous. Everybody's clothes were gorgeous, and the mummy looked good too. They even gave that mummy that walk that trips over itself a little bit. You know, when it takes that step forward, the back of its foot drags around the ground. I liked that. I'm not going to talk about Claire's lying at the end of the episode. That is just a topic I'm done with. But the episode was beautiful. I love the closing scene that's all tinted pink and the conversations between the Doctor and Clara. Everything was so heartwarming. It put me in that Doctor Who happy place. This episode was good. I mean, at one point, I was absolutely terrified for the Doctor. I thought he was going to die, and I thought he was going to meet Missy in the afterlife. But he didn't, because he's a superhero, and I love Doctor Who. Okay, review over. Yes, you can talk about the planets now.
Mr. Holmes, I
am a traveller, judging by the quaint cut of your cloth. A foreign tailor? Overcoat Campbell. No, Cameron. A Celt.
And?
The openness of your hands conveys honesty, which you most certainly are, but
yes?
You have an edge.
Actually, I'm here to help you. By executive order of Scotland Yard.
This is not Scotland Yard documentation. A fake.
I'm a policeman.
Obviously not the plainclothes unit. Doctor, I'm
everything that I would have expected.
You are a curiosity. You may accompany me. I'm short a companion.
I'm the companion.
Well, you've just been listening to a little piece of audio from the Doctor Who fan audio, Dark Journey. This is something I spoke about in the last episode of Who Wars, and this time around I promised a little bit more on it. So there's a snippet of audio, and in the background to me speaking now, you can hear some of the music by the prog rock band Traffic Experiment that's also used in the audio series. Basically, Doctor Who Dark Journey promotes itself as New Who meets Classic Who with an edge. If you think of Big Finish audio adventures, if you've ever heard of Big Finish audio, this is very similar stuff. This isn't someone just reading you a piece of fan fiction. This is actors acting out scenes with sound effects and basically setting the tone and making you think there's a whole world going on in the audio, and it's really quite clever stuff. You know, at the start of this episode, I was banging on about this podcast being a grassroots kind of thing, and I see fan audios like this in much the same vein. This is talented fans getting out there and using their skills to create something new that they'd like other fans to listen to and comment on and think about. You know, it's not trying to replace Big Finish or anything like that. This is just fans creating something new and good, and I'd really love for you folk out there listening, if you're into this style of audio, to go and give Dark Journey a listen. You can go to amaudiomedia.com and hear some episodes, or soundcloud.com/amaudiomedia, facebook.com/amaudiomedia, or twitter.com/amaudiomedia, and you'll be able to find this content. Speaking of that website, I went there earlier and noted there are 5 episodes of Doctor Who Dark Journey up. I've only heard the first one through a SoundCloud link I was sent. And the episodes are The Doctor Meets the Great Detective, Descent into Darkness, Noble Soulmates, Emily Looks to the Stars, and Death on Baker Street. Death on Baker Street, you say? Well, yes, if you look at the premise of the series, basically a recently regenerated, emotionally shattered Doctor who's on his last regeneration arrives in London and becomes the unexpected companion to Sherlock Holmes. Now, I think you might have got that from the audio as well, the Doctor's almost excitement at being someone else's companion for a change. I really liked that in the audio there. I think that was a good scene to play. And essentially, the Doctor and Sherlock are teamed up initially under the umbrella of Scotland Yard in an attempt to stop Jack the Ripper. But could there be an even greater evil at work in Victorian England? Well, I think there might be. So if you'd like to know more, if you'd like to hear what this greater evil might be, if you'd like to see the Doctor being someone's companion for a change rather than vice versa, do check this out. The website I mentioned earlier and the other mediums will give you tons of information about this, not just the audio of the series itself, but more information on the writer, director, the cast and the crew, And yeah, I'm sure they would be very, very keen to hear your feedback. AM Audio Media is based in Toronto in Canada, and they produce all sorts of dramatic and comedic audio plays. So who knows, you might even like some of their other stuff. The Doctor Who stuff might just be your way in to seeing what else M.A. Tamburo and the team are doing over there. So, that's Doctor Who Dark Journey. It's well worth your time if you're into audios like this, and I'd certainly be interested in hearing what you think of this as well as M.A. Tamburo and the team. Do write me as well.
Hey everyone! I hope you're ready for another review from the BBC's new series Adventure audiobook line. Brace yourselves, this one's gonna get a bit brutal. Spoiler, I didn't like it. Okay, so the book this time is The Nemanite Invasion, written by David Roden, and it came out in February of 2009. And this one is read by Catherine Tate. So the characters in this one are the 10th Doctor, who also goes by John Smith, Donna Noble, a plethora of military officers. The main guy is the Vice Admiral Ramsay, and he's about to embark on one of the most celebrated maneuvers in World War II history. And then you've got a bunch of other military guys, but I'll get to more on that later. And then the bad guy in this one is the Nemanite, and that is a blood-sucking parasite that's breeding and hoping to take over the Earth. The setting is World War II, 1940 to be exact, and it's in Dover, Britain. And it takes place in this network of underground tunnels that are a secret operation for the British naval efforts during World War II. And then also part of it takes place on a German U-boat. All right, so the basic premise of this is that the TARDIS and a crystalline sphere crash land in the sea near Dover in May of 1940. The Vice Admiral Ramsay, he orders an investigation of this, and he discovers that it is not German. Donna and the Doctor are brought to the command center for questioning, and at the same time, the sphere that crash-landed in the sea, it cracks open, and the Nemanite detects a German U-boat, which it quickly devours. So at this point, the Doctor is still under suspicion, but he manages to convince Ramsay of his alien nature, and then eventually to go ahead with that Operation Dynamo, which actually, I didn't know what that was. I had to look that up. I'm not a history buff, but it is a real thing that happened during World War II, and it saved a lot of lives. So by doing this, the Doctor saved the course of history. So ultimately, they defeat the Nemanites by electrifying the head one with a transformer, and then this guy, Fosbroke, who actually was a love interest for Donna Noble in this one, he sacrifices himself by blowing up the U-boat, where they lured all the little baby Nemanites. Okay, so now to the fun part. My thoughts about this. So basically, I can summarize up how I felt about this audiobook in one word. And it's in my notes, large and scrawlingly towards the top. It says, boring. Especially compared to the last one I reviewed, The Forever Trap. That one was really good, and I really enjoyed that one. Especially compared to that one. This one was just boring. So, Catherine Tate, she did an okay job reading on this one, but it just wasn't as good as the last book. And there was just too many similar characters, and I guess the voices weren't enunciated enough for you to be able to distinguish between them, and it made it really hard to follow along with. Now, for an audiobook, this really didn't have that much music or sound effects, and that's kind of what makes an audiobook good, so points taken off for that. The World War II setting obviously can be extremely fascinating, like we saw in The Empty Child or Let's Kill Hitler, but this one falls flat. Too much military jargon, a dull narrative, and unrelatable characters. And also the monster, the Nemanite, it's gross, bizarre, and frankly disturbing. This story is as gloomy as its Dover setting, and I had a tough time getting through it. The 2.5 hours seemed like forever. So, in case you couldn't tell, I did not like this one. And I've been going back and forth on what I should even give this one for a rating, but I think ultimately I will give this one 4 sonic screwdrivers out of 10. Alright, so there you have it. This one has definitely been my least favorite of these audiobooks that I've gone through so far. What will the next one be like, I wonder? Hopefully it'll be better than this one. But stay tuned when I do the next audiobook review to see if I liked it better than this one. All right. Until then, allons-y, and may the Force be with you.
This is M.A. Timber reminding you that for free, full episodes of Doctor Who Dark Journey, news, cast info, and much more, visit us online at amaudiomedia.com.
Cool beans!
Okay, and that brings us to the end of the 8th Who Wars. I hope you enjoyed that episode. We certainly enjoyed putting it together for you. Do remember, this coming week, there will be two special episodes of Who Wars on Tuesday night, Australian time. I'll chat in full with Eric J about Star Wars. You had a little taste of that earlier in this episode. On Thursday night, I'll chat with Eric J about Doctor Who. Then on Sunday, we'll have our regular show, followed by the following Wednesday, the interview with Eric J regarding comic books, drawing, how he got into the industry, some of his funny anecdotes from around the traps. Even if you have friends and family who aren't into Star Wars and Doctor who would never listen to this podcast in a million years, you might want to get them tuning into that one, because it is certainly a great podcast with a professional comic book artist, and there's a lot of very, very cool content in it. Okay, as I said at the start of the show, if you have an iTunes account, please open it up right now and give us a rating. Just a one-sentence review along with your rating would see us start to get bumped up the rankings, would start to see other fans like yourself find the podcast. There are people out there who haven't heard of us and will never hear of us unless you give us some help in this area. We're a grassroots podcast. We do it the grassroots way. We'd love for you to do it the grassroots way and bump us up organically like that. Okay, if you can help, that would be just fantastic. Until Tuesday night, I remain Rob Irwin. Take care of yourselves. And if I don't talk to you on Twitter or Facebook or email or something before then, look after each other.
Well, that wraps it up for another episode of Who Wars. If you'd like to be in touch with the show, simply email hello@whowars.net. Find us on Twitter @WhoWars, or if Facebook's more your thing, at facebook.com/WhoWars. Oh, and don't forget to leave us a rating on iTunes. See you next time.